Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Off and rolling on a Thursday, September 11th, 2025 is the date. Welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, Gabe Kuhn, on X at G_Kuhn71. Alongside me, back in the saddle after a couple of days out of town, that would be Connor Donning on X at C929. Connor, how's it going, brother?
What's up, man?
Before we get going, we are commemorating today the 24th anniversary of the attacks, terror attacks, at One World Trade. And it's a day of remembrance. It's a day we'll never forget. And I would be remiss if I did not mention that off the top. And it also is a tough day because the truth of the matter is we're going through an existential crisis here in the United States of America. It's not lost on me what transpired yesterday at Utah Valley University with the shooting and death of Charlie Kirk. Also in the foothills of Colorado, a school shooting. It's really a tough day, and I'll save you any soapbox moments or anything like that, and I'll just say we need to be better. I think that we have sowed division to a point in this country. I hope that we can mend fences at some point, although I would be lying to you if I said that at times I don't feel hopeless about it and a little helpless about it. But I think that attacking things with love and bipartisanship is the way to go, and it feels like we're not doing that. But I'm just going to leave it at that, and I hope to be an escape, because the truth of the matter is, I heard John Martin say it earlier on Jason and John, as much as our shows here at 92.9 FM ESPN are an escape for our listeners, it truly is an escape for us as well.
Yeah.
We feel the same emotions that you're feeling out there, and I hope that we can do that for you. I hope that we can be a reprieve. Now, on that note, we do have 3 hours of talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM ESPN and yours truly. We have plenty to get to on the show. We have Thursday night football. We have the Commanders visiting the Packers. That should be a very, very fun Thursday night football game on Amazon Prime. We do have off the top of the show, we have to talk about some more updates when it comes to this Kawhi Leonard, Steve Ballmer, Clippers situation. Because Pablo Torre, I don't know if he's withholding information until Steve Ballmer speaks, but it kind of seems that way.
Yes.
I think
there's absolutely some of that going
but
on.
But more has been released, and I think this time I have a completely different outlook on this entire situation and how it could potentially go down. As far as guests are concerned, Kyron Samuels will join at 4:30 to talk everything college football, including the AP poll wars that have been going on all this week. I think South Florida is ranked at 18. People have issues with that. People have issues with every particular ballot that has been released. So we will discuss that with Kai, as well as getting into the weekend and what could be a bit of a separation weekend for the SEC, seeing who true contenders are and seeing who may fall back and be in the middle of the pack. The Tennessee-Georgia game comes to mind. The Texas A&M-Notre Dame game comes to mind. Florida-LSU. There's a lot to unpack there. But on top of Kai, 5 o'clock, Jeff Calkins will join the show per normal. And then 6 o'clock, as normal, on a Thursday, Ryan Silverfield will join the show, head coach over at the University of Memphis, to talk about last week's game, look inside the program. We'll get some injury updates from him, and then we will talk about what he is seeing on film from Troy. And by the way, Connor, I know we talked about this on Monday, but Troy It may be a bit of a test.
Could get squirrely.
Could get a little bit squirrely. You're on the road. You're an hour away, from what I understand now. You're an hour away. They're staying an hour away from the campus of Troy. So they're going to have a nice little bus ride in. And Troy last week held a 16-3 lead on the road at the number 8 team in the country's place, Clemson. So could get a little squirrely. We'll see how that goes.
Just go for the Achilles heel for Troy. Little historical joke for you.
There you go. Do what you can to go win a ball game. We'll have the Blitz at 6:30, trip around the NFL at 5:30. You know the drill. Now we have more on the Clippers aspiration Kawhi Leonard saga. Now I think the best thing to do before we get into the updates is give you a brief review of what we know and what we knew going into today. Kawhi Leonard, on top of the contract that he was getting from the Los Angeles Clippers, agreed to a 4-year, $28 million no-show, and I'm doing air quotes here, endorsement agreement with Aspiration, which is a now-defunct tree-planting company that Clippers owner Steve Ballmer had direct investment in the tune of $50 million for the startup. The allegations that are attached to this are a clear and obvious attempt to subvert the salary cap. In other words, the Clippers made up for funds they weren't paying Kawhi Leonard and his contract by striking this deal, and in turn could gain a competitive advantage by saving money toward the salary cap. That's what we knew going into today. Now today, the guy who has been all over this and has done a hell of a job when it comes to investigative journalism, Pablo Torre, he reported that Dennis J. Wong, a Clippers limited partner, invested $1.99 million into Aspiration 9 days before the company paid a $1.75 million payment to Kawhi Leonard. That payment was overdue and late, and it seems like if you put two and two together, that $2 million investment from Dennis Wong, a limited partner, a limited owner of the Los Angeles Clippers, probably went directly to Leonard. But don't want to speculate too much. The payment to Leonard, according to the payment schedule, like I said, was late, as the company was reportedly having financial troubles before ultimately declaring bankruptcy. I just want to note something before we really get into the conversation. Investing $2 million into a known sinking ship of a company is not normal. You don't do that because you're not receiving return on investment. You're not going to see that money come back into your pocket in any way, shape, or form. So this is very, very bizarre. If you're doing that, there has to be a pretty big reason to do so. Now, this in itself is more circumstantial evidence. But I will say, and I will contend, very damning circumstantial evidence. Worth noting yet again, circumstantial evidence that cannot be explained by the person being accused is punishable, according to the NBA CBA. We learned that today on Pablo Torre Finds Out. Pablo Torre let us in there. To add, Steve Ballmer, claiming he was defrauded and has been led astray by Aspiration, may not be enough if the circumstantial evidence is not explainable. Also, co-owner Dennis Wong, who made this $2 million investment, claiming the same, that he was defrauded and he was led astray, may not be enough either. There's two things to me at this point that could happen. One, an NBA investigation finds the same things that Pablo Torre has, and Adam Silver is forced to punish his buddy Steve Ballmer and the Clippers. That's the first thing. That would be sort of the open and shut, what we expect to happen type of scenario. And for, you know, circumventing the cap, which is what is being accused here, we do have some type of understanding of what could happen to the Clippers in that particular instance. In 2000, I think it was Minnesota Timberwolves, correct me if I'm wrong, Connor, with, I believe, Joe Smith.
Yes.
They were docked 5 draft picks, and all of the people that were accused were suspended for an entire year, and there was also additional penalties, correct?
Let's also not forget Steve Ballmer has been fined before for trying to circumvent the NBA salary cap, most notably with DeAndre Jordan. That happened. That's a real thing that already happened. And that's why one of the most surprising things from this new episode of Pablo Torre Finds Out was the revelation that Steve Ballmer, who was fined for cap circumvention, audits cap circumvention for the NBA. That I could not believe
That's absolutely insane. But if the NBA investigation finds the same things that Pablo Torre has, and it feels like they may, and they're forced to punish Steve Ballmer and the Clippers, it feels like Adam Silver would have no choice but to be heavy-handed. Seems to me that at a point that an investigation finds that guilt, his hands may be tied. This is out in the public. You have a lot of outrage from a lot of different angles at this point. It just feels like Adam Silver would have his hand forced if the NBA finds similar things to what Pablo Torre has found at this point. Now, the other thing that could happen is that they say there's insufficient evidence and nothing occurs. And this, to me, Connor, is the interesting and also kind of demoralizing outcome. It's demoralizing because I like to think that as sports fans, as people that cover sports, we appreciate integrity and rule following. Now, I understand there's been various instances in all of our professional sports where rules have not been followed and certain franchises have not been punished accordingly. But on top of it being demoralizing, what makes it interesting? From where I stand and what I have seen from Pablo Torre, it seems like an open shut case. It really does. It couldn't be more obvious what happened here. The Clippers supplemented Kawhi Leonard's pay using a company directly invested in by ownership that ultimately helped them build a better team by subverting the salary cap. That's what it seems like on the surface. If that conclusion is not drawn by all that Pablo Torre has uncovered and by all the NBA investigation uncovers eventually, and let's be clear about what Pablo Torre has found. Direct $50 million investment from Steve Ballmer, the owner of the Clippers. Kawhi endorsement deal of $28 million that is a no-show endorsement deal. A fired-for-cause clause in the endorsement contract that stated Kawhi would not be paid unless he played for the Los Angeles Clippers. And then today's development, a $2 million investment into a dying company by a co-owner that seems to have been rerouted to Kawhi Leonard in 9 days. That's what has been found.
Right.
So if they find what's been found is insufficient evidence to ultimately punish the Clippers, if they don't draw that obvious conclusion, then here's my take. I think the salary cap subversion idea, it'll be impossible to prove going into the future.
Agreed.
It shows that it would be impossible to prove. And if it's impossible to prove, here's my question. What's stopping teams from doing it? Heavily. Not a damn thing. If they don't find sufficient evidence with what has been uncovered by Pablo Torre, then it feels like it would be free for everybody to go ahead and do. So, needless to say, I think the incoming investigation by the NBA that has already started, I think this is a very, very important investigation that could change how we view NBA contracts, the salary cap, and everything else.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And another thing is that the Boston Sports Journal also found that Kawhi Leonard got an additional $20 million, so that the total that he has received was $48 million. And again, Steve Ballmer's initial investment was $50 million. I don't think that's a coincidence. I don't. And to the point that you were just making, if all of this is not enough to warrant substantial punishment for the Clippers, it is only going to
empower
and encourage salary cap circumvention from other teams. Because,
and I'm not even saying that probably happens already,
especially with the additional news that in the NBA, according to the CBA, the circumstantial evidence is evidence that can be punished.
Yes,
so it feels like we have all the evidence in the world to bring a punishment to the Clippers. especially today. I think that everything leading up to today was already punishable. But today's evidence is a direct link to the Clippers and aspiration. There is a direct link there.
It's another
from the Clippers
owner.
To aspiration to Kawhi Leonard. There, it is the other minority owner within the Clippers. You're telling me.
Very good friend of Steve Ballmer.
Very good friend. You're telling me that he saw a company that was struggling to make even payroll and said, this is a company I want to put $2 million into, which, by the way, also happened to line up with Kawhi Leonard not being paid the $1.75 million he was owed by aspiration.
And then nine days later,
he was paid. You're telling me that all of these things are supposed to be a coincidence, that none of these things are supposed to be connected. To that, I say, no way.
No chance.
Just no chance. There are multiple sources within Aspiration that have said this was going on, that it is a direct deal with the Clippers to pay Kawhi Leonard. Also, what came out in this podcast today, and this is very important too, the deal that Kawhi Leonard has with Aspiration is odd for many reasons, the no-show probably being the biggest of them. But when you look at the actual numbers and the annual payments that he was supposed to receive over time, his deal with Aspiration was more than his shoe deal.
Yep.
Why would that be? Why would that be? Other than salary cap circumvention. Because one thing that the Clippers haven't been able to do is offer any real reasoning why this deal was there.
The only explanation to this point was from Steve Ballmer to Ramona Shelburne on ESPN last week saying, we were defrauded. I was led astray. That's all we've heard from the Clipper side of this thing.
Because why would Aspiration have a deal with Kawhi Leonard and pay him what we now know is $48 million over time, or promised him $48 million over time, to have a no-show in there? They get no benefit from it. Kawhi's not, he's not doing anything to promote their business. They're not getting any benefit except,
and then
here's the benefit. They're the jersey sponsor for the Clippers.
Yeah,
they're one of the biggest sponsors of the new arena. And so you're telling me all of these things are a coincidence. I say it's ridiculous, especially when we already have the evidence that Steve Ballmer has in the past tried and been caught trying to circumvent the NBA salary cap.
And we know that Kawhi's uncle, Dennis,
tried to do this
multiple times, tried to do it with the Toronto Raptors, tried to do it with the Lakers. The Lakers said, that's illegal. We're not doing that. He ultimately signs with the Clippers. And my only conclusion to him signing with the Clippers after asking the Raptors and the Lakers to do that when he was in free agency is that the Clippers were willing to make these deals with him. So all this is to say, this is a very, very important investigation that is headed our way. It truly is. Because if the NBA decides that there isn't sufficient evidence to ultimately bring a punishment to the Clippers, Steve Ballmer, Kawhi Leonard, Dennis Wong, then this is free for everybody to do. It'll be a free-for-all when it comes to circumventing the salary cap. And also, I thought about this. If this does happen that way, and they don't find sufficient evidence, this puts more emphasis on larger markets being able to do things like this and richer owners being able to do things like this. It would further hurt small markets from being able to attract free agents, from being able to be a solid destination for NBA players to go. Because ultimately, NBA players would try to strike deals like this, and it's easier to do it in a bigger market with a more wealthy owner.
I think that today's evidence is, I think
it's the smoking
they
gun.
I think they had already found
sure.
the treasure chest of smoking guns. This gun was being fired as they found it. There is a direct link in payment from a Clippers co-owner to Aspiration, which 9 days later went to Kawhi Leonard when they defaulted on a payment to him. And we're getting phone calls from Uncle Dennis asking,
yes.
Where's my money? Where's our money? It makes no sense at all. And I'm sorry, I am not buying the excuse from the Clippers that Steve Ballmer had no knowledge of what was going on with Aspiration. The amount of, the $300 million endorsement deal that they made with the Clippers, you're telling me that Steve Ballmer The man that we are supposed to know as being one of the smartest with his money makes the best investments we've ever seen. You're telling me that same man didn't recognize that this company was fraudulent. In my opinion, he saw an opportunity to circumvent the NBA salary cap because he knew that this company was mostly scammers, and he said, they will do whatever I ask them to as long as I give them this deal and help them along with their own scam. And he is talking a lot. Also, the Clippers keep putting out statements and changing the statements, and you know what's not in there anymore? Provably false. That has been removed from these statements because they know that they have been caught red-handed. The only question that remains to me now is, can you actually make a direct link to Steve Ballmer?
But,
and what is the punishment going to be? Because here is a pathway that I could see this going down. There is a direct link with my minority owner now.
Correct.
Who could end up being the fall guy in this entire situation. That could absolutely be,
yes. But that's only $2 million worth of payments.
But it, even if it's only $2 million, it is
a direct link and a direct
violation of the NBA salary cap. Yes. It is matter if it is a dollar or $2 million or $20 million, 28, 48, whatever it is, it is a, and again, Adam Silver himself has said this is a cardinal sin of the NBA to try to circumvent the NBA salary cap.
But he also, in turn, yesterday said he had no idea who Aspiration was. He had no idea there were jersey patches for the Los Angeles Clippers.
Which I find ridiculous.
Which is insane. But he said a lot of stupidity
in a moment. It's shameful what he did. Just absolutely ridiculous. He has to punish the Clippers here. There is too much evidence for this to have not been a connection.
And there's too much at stake when it comes to circumventing the salary cap going into the future if you let them off the hook. Truthfully, there's too much at stake. You have to find some level of integrity and hold them accountable, depending, obviously, on what the NBA investigation finds. Now, I think when you just look at all of the evidence that Pablo Torre has found, most of it is circumstantial still. Now, here's my question. He has seven sources that he has put on his podcast that were ranging from employees at Aspiration to executives at Aspiration. If those employees or executives end up coming forward, revealing their names, and working with the NBA, this will be as open and shut a case as you'll ever see in any sport ever. But it will require them to come forward, use their identity, and not hide behind anonymity.
Well, that was addressed in the podcast today as well. They can't do that right now. There is a DOJ, FBI investigation into Aspiration right now. That is not possible. Now, the NBA may have avenues in their investigation to maybe be able to do this. That is probably fully, but it will never be public to the public. It
but
may
those
become
are
public
direct
to the investigation.
Those are direct witnesses.
And all of them have said the same thing. He knew about it, and the vibe around the office was,
that's not circumstantial, though, is the point I'm making.
Yes, do not talk about Steve Ballmer and the Clipper, because he knew about this. There is paper trails, payments, and we can't downplay the fact. There is one other minority owner of the Clipper. One! Steve Ballmer owns 99% of the Clippers. The 1% owner made a $2 million payment that just happened to be when Kawhi Leonard needed money from Aspiration. The one guy, who made the payment, by the way, when this company already knew it was going under. The employee said people weren't getting paid. Executives were getting laid off. The same day that Kawhi Leonard got this payment, people were being fired because they couldn't make payroll. But Kawhi Leonard made payroll, and it just happened to be the same
time after a $2 million investment.
That a gift shows up. you're telling me that has nothing to do with the Clippers?
Like, listen, we can sit here and act like that is, it's not, in my opinion, circumstantial, but by the letter of the law, it is circumstantial. By the letter of the law, it is. I know what happened. You know what happened. We all know what happened. Pablo Torre knows what happened. Steve Ballmer, minority owner of the Clippers, Dennis Wong knows what happened.
But it still is
circumstantial in the end of the day.
Let's also be very clear about this, too. When a company is going under, because on the paperwork that he shows, It says critical, top priority, Kawhi Leonard. What? Yep. If your company's going under and you don't have enough money to
and
make
the
payroll,
biggest thing is to pay
what's
Kawhi
the
Leonard?
First thing you would do?
Save your company.
You would save your company by cutting off endorsement deals and saying, listen, we have to void that. We can't pay you. We can't pay you.
Yes.
But you're telling me the main priority of a company that was going out of business and being investigated for fraud was to pay
that late payment.
Uncle Dennis and Kawhi Leonard? Give me a break.
Doesn't make sense.
Doesn't
make
sense.
All right, now on the Adam Silver front, he spoke to the media yesterday. And I just, should we just play this sound without comment before, afterwards we'll comment? Just this is about the NBA and how he feels about his product when it comes to broadcast television and ratings on a night-to-night basis, people watching the games in turn. Go ahead and play it. Does he not hear himself?
What a shameful answer.
I'm not worried Ridiculous. About people actually watching the games. I'd rather them take in Ja Morant highlights on TikTok. That's what our product is.
Absolutely ridiculous
about.
Quote.
And really, this was in response about the rising costs of watching regular season NBA games. My biggest issue with this is I would raise my hand to Adam Silver and I'd say, do you have any say in pricing? Do you have any say in how we push out the product and get people to watch on a night-to-night basis? If the rising cost and how much it is the biggest issue, do you have any say in that? Because I would imagine as the commissioner of the league who gives away these games to TV companies, you would have some level of say in how that would be spread around. Now, I understand you have your contract. I understand that billions of dollars have been spent for the rights of the games that you give away. But at the same time, it just feels like you have some level of control over the rising costs of your product. But I think when we just get down to it, it is embarrassing for a sitting commissioner to basically give up on the idea that your viewership, your fans are actually going to watch regular season games from start to finish, actually tune into a game. And your only idea at this point is, well, we have free avenues. They're called TikTok. They're 10-second clips. There's Twitter. That's not how a successful league operates in any way, shape, or form. You want people to watch night to night. And I just have nothing else to say on the Adam Silver front.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Besides, that's an embarrassing answer and the opposite of what anyone wants to hear at this point.
Agreed. You nailed it. You absolutely nailed it. It's an embarrassing answer from a commissioner who, in my opinion, is failing. He's been failing for a while now. It's been a long time since Adam Silver did something that I agree with. He's not growing the sport in the correct way. He is not promoting the sport in the correct way. The fans are not a priority. The product on the court is not a priority for him. It is simply making money. That is it. And it is infuriating to hear this type of answer from the commissioner of the NBA. Oh, you can't pay for it? Well, go watch a 10-second clip. No. The NBA and sports in this country should be accessible to everyone despite their income or despite how much money they make. That's one of the points of sports is the escape. You talked about it at the beginning of the show. One of the reasons sports holds such a big place in this country, and I think in society as a whole across the globe, is it is an escape for people who have to go to work their asses off, have hard days, and they can come home, sit on the couch, turn on a game, and watch their favorite
team. Grab a Miller Lite.
And you're telling me that you're telling those people, sorry, you can't pay for it, so here's a 10-second clip
TikTok.
Instead.
Shut up for TikTok.
Shove it. He's a coward. And honestly, what also came out in Pablo Torre's podcast today was that at the governor's meetings, Adam Silver made the decision to not talk about Steve Ballmer and the investigation going on with the Los Angeles Clippers. Coward.
It's nasty. Nasty, nasty business. All right, now let's go ahead and transition and talk about some fun things that are going to happen this weekend. College football, week three. In my opinion, a bit of a separation weekend for the contenders and pretenders in the SEC. Let's talk about that with Kyron Samuels on the other side. Kyron Samuels is an NFL and college football writer and analyst for Sports Illustrated, also a national scout at Clutch Sports. He's on X at Kyron Samuels, and he joins every single Thursday at this time. Kyron, what's happening, man?
What's happening, man? Happy to be back talking some ball.
Yes, sir. Week three of college football is on the way, and I've been sort of workshopping a take all week. And I think it has to do with the way things have been in college football with the two main conferences, two big conferences at the top, the Big Ten and the SEC, the past two going on 3 years, it feels like. So we know that the Big Ten has won back-to-back national championships. And this year, I feel pretty confident in three teams at the top of that conference, Penn State, Oregon, and of course, Ohio State, who handled business against Texas in week one. But with the SEC, I feel like we're in a very similar situation as well as we have been the past 3 years, where I don't quite fully understand or know who's going to separate themselves in that conference. And if we look at the last couple of years, Guy, I think you as an SEC fan will at least acknowledge this. There hasn't really been a full separation at the top of the conference. So far, I know it's very early in the season, how do you feel about the SEC and sort of the top of it? I think it's good top to bottom. You had the Mississippi State win. You have, Oklahoma handling business against Michigan at home. But how do you feel about the top of the conference and the teams that could potentially separate themselves?
I think it's far too early in the season to kind of make those assumptions. We all have our predictions, of course, who we think is going to be there at the end of the year. But I'll use a team like LSU as an example. If you take them from the Clemson game, they look like the best team in the country. It was the most impressive win week one, in my opinion. The Ohio State-Texas game was great, but when you go on the road to do it against a top five team at that time, a veteran-laden team like that Clemson team, and you handle business the way LSU did, to me, they were the most impressive team week one.
Sure.
Then you turn on the tape from week two when they play South Carolina State, they play a Division I FCS team. They don't look nearly the same. I mean, they only put up 20 points in that game. They struggled to find the end zone. They moved the ball up and down the field. They scored. They had a lot of yards, but they weren't able to translate that into point. The defense held strong again. The defense had another great week. So I use a team like that as an example because you're at that variance early in the season, and I hope we can kind of get through the weeds here in a couple weeks. Alabama's getting ready to play Georgia. If Georgia dominates Tennessee this week, Alabama the next week, we'll be looking at Georgia as a team that's going to be that cream of the crop. The same can be said for a team like Tennessee. If they're able to beat Georgia and kind of get some momentum going here and have some quality wins, we'll be talking about a team like them. So I think that the excitement of the league and the depth of the league is playing to that. It's making it harder to have those separation years because there is a lot more parity within the conference as opposed to other years where you've had two or three really good teams, a solid middle group, and then maybe a team like Kentucky or Vanderbilt that has been struggling down at the bottom. But we're kind of seeing that's even changing with Vanderbilt, a team like them,
sure,
with a quality non-conference win over Virginia Tech, and they did have some quality non-conference wins last season as well. So I think the top 8 to 10 are as close as they've ever been in this conference.
Yes, and like I think when you just look at like Mississippi State over Arizona State or some just basically that, I mean, you see that the bottom of this conference, or Kentucky – hanging in there with Ole Miss and making it a fight yet again, even though it felt like Ole Miss owed them one. It just shows some real power top to bottom. But it's just you look at the top of the conference and you just still have questions. Because even with that LSU win over Clemson in week one, I side-eyed Clemson in week two. I don't know about you. 16-3 at halftime against Troy. You know what I mean? It doesn't feel like they're clicking on all cylinders. Now, we carry the Vols right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. They're playing Georgia. It's without question the biggest game, 2:30 on ABC, Tennessee at home, Georgia 4.5-point favorites. Like, when you look at this game, how do you feel? Because normal common sense the past few years would say Georgia would go into Tennessee and handle business. But I have not seen the Georgia of the past this year. It feels a little bit tampered down.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting game from the, you know, prospects that it is a little bit tempered down, like you said, offensively. But I do think that Georgia defense is going to be, you know, hell on wheels. I think they're going to have a great game. I trust that defense. I trust their special team units. And I trust Kirby Smart. I think when these type of matchups happen, especially early in the year, when you don't really know what the teams are yet, they have a lot of talent or they have some game or two here where they've shown some stuff, I think that's when you really, really lean on the expertise of the coaching staff and then those guys that have been in those situations. And I'm not saying the hype will happen. I've seen Kirby Smart in these situations for almost a decade, and more times than not, he comes out on top of them. So I'm taking Georgia to go ahead and get that win. I think it'll be close. Heupel's offense is always, you know, produce something. Even if they're not scoring in bushels, they're producing yardage. They're putting pressure on defenses. They're always attacking for the most part. I think it's going to be a fun game, but I'm going to go with Georgia there. I think they'll squeak right out a nice victory. And I've been, you know, I'm going to throw out score prediction. So I'm going to throw out a score prediction of 27-17. I think it'll be that type of game where Georgia maybe scores a late one and pulls away and kind of gets some separation there.
Here's what favors Georgia, right? Tennessee likes to spread it out, and they've been running the ball very successfully the past 2 years, quite frankly, because I don't know if they've trusted their quarterback position in the best of ways. Now, they try to run into light boxes. The thing is about Georgia, they are willing to put a light box out there because they say, our athletes are 4 and 5 stars. We've developed them. We feel really good about it. And by the way, yeah, we do have a defensive head coach who's done a really good job with it in Kirby Smart. And also the DC in itself, Glenn Schumann, may be up for jobs. But they, like, that's what Tennessee tries to do. They spread you out. They try to run into light boxes. And it feels like Georgia's going to give them that. Can Tennessee assert some dominance there? Win a couple of those battles in the trenches and make something happen with the light boxes that Georgia is going to give them. But I do think that favors Georgia. I think this game comes down to, correct me if I'm wrong, Joey Aguilar, can you make some throws? In the end of the day, can you make some throws? Can you make something happen on third down? Can you hit a couple of chunk plays on this Georgia defense? If you can do that, I give you a really good shot of winning this game.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of like, I agree with you in the sense that he has to make plays. But I'm kind of the opposite end of the spectrum where I'm more interested in the plays that he doesn't make. Is he going to avoid that critical mistake? Because I think just by the nature of that offense, you're going to have some vertical shots down the field. And I think he's plenty talented enough to get the ball out, make some things happen. But is he going to make that critical mistake? Is he going to force a ball on first down when he shouldn't? Is he going to, get spooked in the pocket and run into a sack? Those are the type of plays that I'm really looking for him to make because I think that he's plenty talented. I mean, you don't want to make too many assumptions based off of two games, but he looks like he can throw the ball around plenty. We watched him at other places where we know he's the talented quarterback. So I like that he's going to – I like his chances connecting on some of those vertical plays down the field. But I just want him to protect the ball, play safe, because you cannot turn the ball over against a team like Georgia that one feeds off of that. They are the type of team that they can start an avalanche quick with one swing of momentum. And two, they're going to run the ball a lot. I don't see them airing the ball out a ton against Tennessee. I think they're going to stick to their run game. They have 3 or 4 backs that they're playing. They're rotating 3 or 4 tight ends in the game. They love the screen game with Zachariah Branch, some of those guys, which is just an extension of the run game. So I think they're going to chew up a ton of clock. And with those new clock rules that we have, these games are going by a lot faster. Yep. So I think teams are still adjusting to the lack of possessions that they're having. So that's why I'm looking for Joey to do. Take care of the ball. And like you said, they have a good chance to win this ball game.
Yeah, and something we talked about off the air is this week, it looks relatively unassuming on the surface, but it feels like there is some really substantial opportunities for some upsets. Of course, Tennessee maybe could do it to Georgia. But there's three that you and I talked about. South Florida, who just handled business in the swamp against Florida, the number 13 team in the country, against Miami, of course. Then you have Arkansas at Ole Miss. Like, that's one that I'm really keeping an eye on because Talen Green looks a lot better. Now, they have not played good competition yet. It was Arkansas State and it was an FCS school before that, and he's put up a lot of yards rushing and throwing. But Arkansas looks a lot better this year, especially defensively. And then there's another one that I feel really good about, at least taking the points. Georgia Tech and Clemson. Georgia Tech, they have some physicality that Clemson may have to deal with coming up on Saturday. How do you feel about those three games? And do you think we could see a fair amount of upsets this weekend?
Yeah, I think it's safe to say we could see a fair amount of upsets. But, you know, we kind of talked about this a little bit. I don't think that these will be all too shocking based off the way the first couple weeks have played out, if you've been paying attention. Like a team like South Florida, with a guy like Byron Brown and what he's been able to do, and, you know, their head coach and his trajectory. I mean, we look at him last year, they almost went in Tuscaloosa. I know the score line read 42-16 at the end of the game, but for about 3.5 quarters there, they were playing very tough with Alabama. And then they kind of translated that over through the season and had some ups and downs. But they've kind of been building towards this momentum the last couple of seasons. And then we saw what they were able to do against Florida. We saw what they were able to do against Boise State and kind of impose their will. I go back to Byron Brown. He was the guy that going into last season was getting a lot of like top 50 type draft hype going into the season. The draft guys loved him. The scouts loved him just with his talent. Didn't have the type of year that he wanted to last season, but he's a guy that's now kind of building that momentum back up. So it wouldn't be a surprise to me at all to see him make some plays. I like Miami top to bottom. I think they're one of the better teams in the country, at least on paper. I really love what they did in that Notre Dame game. Carson Beck is playing some great football, so I would still favor those guys. But it would not shock me at all if USF was able to go and make some plays there and make that a game. And then you saw it in the Florida game. The longer that you hang around, the longer you give teams like this hope, they're going to feed off that and have a chance. So I wouldn't be shocked in that one at all.
Yeah, and also, if you have 2 15-yard penalties on the final drive of the game when they're starting on their own 11, you can handle business. For but sure. I will say, Mario Cristobal teams tend to do that at times. You know, late game scenarios, situational football doesn't always go their direction. All right, now, this week, as opposed to a lot of weeks we've seen in the past, I don't know, 5 to 10 years, it feels like there's more AP poll drama, right? And I think it has to do with South Florida. South Florida comes in at number 18. I have mentioned it this week. I think it's patronizing. They have the best resume, I think, through 2 weeks of any team in the country. I'm not calling for them to be a top five team, but I will ask the question, if they had a different emblem on their helmet, if they were an SEC team, would they be a top five team? Yeah, people can chew on that question all they want. But there was a couple of pollsters out there, a couple of voters that, and I think in particular, Haley Sawyer, who's a USC reporter out there in Southern California, she moved Florida up 2 spots and kept South Florida out of the poll, her AP poll ballot going into this week. What have you made of all the AP poll drama? Because it feels like it is out there more than it usually is.
Yeah, I think it's something that, you know, I'm kind of being a little bit cautionary about, because I do think that these polls are extremely important, right? I think that when we get ready to go to the college football playoff, they're going to use those ranked wins to determine how they're going to vote for that poll that will officially become the ranked system that we go by to get to the college football playoff. But these games are extremely important, not only for building excitement and building, you know, energy and the atmosphere around these games, but for resume, for quality purposes. And I think when you look at a team like South Florida, they've earned the right to be a top 15 team at minimum. I would say they should be in the top 12. When you look at the Boise's team that came into the year ranked, coming off the Mountain West Championship, all those wins they had last year, college football playoff appearance, a lot of people were predicting them to go back to the playoffs this season. They get dominated week one by USF. Then you go and beat a team that was ranked in the top 13, I believe you said, in Florida. That is a very quality win. If you talk about body of work, they will have the best body of work so far, and they deserve to be rewarded for that accordingly. We give these teams a little bit of flack for not scheduling these games. We get these G5 teams at the end of the year, then everybody's like, who have they played? And they're kind of hovering around that, you know, 15 to 20 area. Well, we don't have that problem here already. They've already beat 2 quality teams, one being in the SEC and the Power Four. So they should be rewarded properly for that. Conversely, you should also not punish a team like Florida, in my opinion, who lost a 1-point game on their home field. You shouldn't drop them from 13 to unranked. I think that's equally as disrespectful to South Florida. You're saying you don't believe that South Florida is that good of a ball team, because if you lose to them by 1 point on your home field, then you don't deserve to be ranked now. So I think there definitely needs to be a little bit more consistency there. A team like Notre Dame, who hasn't had a win yet, they moved up on a lot of people's ballots, and they haven't proven anything yet. So I think those are the type of inconsistencies and discrepancies that we need to focus on, because I do feel bad for the young lady that people are kind of piling on her. But I do think that it's going to wake people up. I think more people are going to be cognizant of that this week when they're casting these ballots, when they're going to take it a lot more seriously. They're going to be they're not going to want to be the next trending topic on
Haley
Twitter
Sawyer.
Or social media.
right.
So they're going to try to avoid that, and I think they'll take it a little bit more seriously. So condolences to the young lady. I hope she's not taking it too hard. I know she deactivated her profile on Twitter. But I do think it's going to cause people to take this a lot more seriously week to week.
My problem with Haley is not just the ballot in itself. It's her explanation after the fact. She joined a podcast and basically said none of this is going to matter by the end of the season. And, I mean, I couldn't disagree anymore. Of course it matters. A lot of the way that we judge teams, a lot of the games that we tune in to watch, you know, I think I was talking to Colton Denning, our good friend, yesterday about the Texas-Ohio State game off the top of the year. If that was not 1-3 and it was 21-23, you don't get 16 million views. You don't get 19 million peak. You know what I mean? Like, the way we view teams, in large part, for better or for worse, and the way we value teams has to do with the number that's attached to their name on a Saturday. It affects betting lines. It affects our view. It affects everything. So I would say to her, while I feel bad, she's protected her tweet. She's gone silent and all of that. I would say to her, it absolutely matters. There's no way you can make the case that it doesn't. I understand the college football playoff rankings, by the time they come out, trump everything. But these games absolutely, absolutely matter. And these rankings, even early in the season, by the AP poll, matter infinitely. They really do.
100%, man. And like we said a little bit earlier, you know, you may not think they mean that much because of the college football playoff rankings that are going to come out. But those posters, those people that are going to get in that room and decide that, are going to look at these matchups and look at what they were ranked by the AP where they're making those decisions. So it's beyond what we just talked about with, you know, the atmosphere that it creates, the excitement that it creates, the pageantry. I mean, this goes back hundreds of years. I mean, we talk about teams that were playing in the early 1900s. We're talking about as far back as that. That's the type of pageantry and excitement that these polls, you know, build. But beyond all that, it's going to have a role in determining the college football playoff too. So I think, listen, like we said again, feel a little bit bad for her, but I think it's going to cost a ton of people to take this a lot more seriously. Maybe some of those people that, you know, weren't staying up to watch the late night games, a team like BYU, who I think doesn't get the love that they deserve. I think maybe some people might stay up a little bit later and watch that game till midnight or 11 p.m. You know, whatever it is when that game's going to be over. Some people may wake up a little bit earlier and kind of get ready to watch those early SEC, ACC slate games where it's still 10 o'clock on the West Coast. Take these seriously because it does mean a lot. And it's what the kids play for at the end of the day. People want to, when you're recruiting, you're not going to, you know, say that, oh, Alabama's playing Georgia. You're going to be like, no, number four Georgia's playing number 10 or whatever they are, Alabama, or number one Ohio State's playing number four Michigan or whatever it is at the time. So those are going to be still quality things to help boost the excitement and morale around college football.
All right, now final thing, going to the NFL tonight, Thursday Night Football, first one on Amazon Prime. Commanders are visiting the Packers. Packers look really good in week one. Jordan Love was solid. The defense was phenomenal. The defense looked great. And Micah Parsons, contrary to popular belief, even though he played 40% of the snaps, I thought he looked like his same old self, even though he's been dealing with that back issue, and there's been some drama, obviously, with the Cowboys trading him. And then the Commanders, I felt like they, for the most part, picked up where they left off offensively. A couple of unnecessary sacks last week against the Giants, but the Giants have a better defense than I think people realize. How do you see this game going, Pack?
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos,
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Packers favored by 3 at home.
You know, I think it's interesting, right? I think the momentum that the Packers had last week, it should translate over. You have another home game. It's a big-time atmosphere. The quarterback matchup that everybody's going to be talking about. But again, I just said it for the college ranks. I'm going to say it again for the professional ranks. I think it's just football at the end of the day. But the coaching matchups are going to matter heavily tonight. And I think that I'll probably favor Dan Quinn's defense in this situation. I know they don't get the respect that they deserve. I think they are a little bit more streaky. They aren't going to wow you with any other stats. But I think Dan Quinn's going to have a good game plan. I think he's going to force Jordan Love to make tight throws into tight windows. And we know that Jordan Love is a type of quarterback that has ridiculous arm talent and athleticism. And he will take those throws. He feels confident enough in himself to take and make.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.